Is the learning in your school competency-based? Is it personalized? Is it happening anytime, anywhere? Is it student-owned? In other words, is the learning student-centered? And are all students learning more deeply, more equitably, and becoming career and college ready? If you have these questions, want to know what the research says about them, and are trying to figure out how to implement these ideas in your classrooms and schools, you've come to the right place. Thank you for listening to the Student-Centered Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Barriff, and I've been a principal and teacher in student-centered schools for over 17 years, and I can't wait to share a story or interview that will help you help your students. On this episode of the pod, Haley Heater, a Spanish and ESL teacher with a background in applied linguistics and second language acquisition, conducts a guest interview as part of her work in a graduate course I teach called Student-Centered Learning in Urban Schools at Providence College. Haley interviews Victor Nasir Terry, who teaches English and theater at Segway Institute for Learning in Central Falls, Rhode Island. He is also a producer of the Afrocentric Lesson Plan podcast, and they discuss culturally responsive teaching. Enjoy the interview.
Hello, listeners. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today. Again, I'm Haley, and we are here today with Victor Nasir Terry, who is an English and theater teacher currently at Segway Institute for Learning, facilitator / collaborator for the Afrocentric podcast.
Yeah, Afrocentric Lesson Plan.
Thank you. Afrocentric Lesson Planning podcast. Which we'll link down below so you guys can take a look at that as well. Welcome, Nas.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm a reader.
Okay.
I'm an avid reader. I love reading. I love studying literature. I love poetry. So theater came about because I felt like the English curriculum at my undergrad institute was just so dry.
Yeah.
It was so
white.
You gotta do Chaucer, and you gotta do Canterbury Tales, which is also Chaucer. You gotta do Gilgamesh, and you gotta do all these, like, the classics.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I don't really care about the class. Like, I like the classics, but also the way they taught them, where it wasn't, like, from a culturally responsive place. So I was like, I don't want to do English, but I still like reading. I still like literature. I still want to study reading and literature as a thing. So that what drew me into the theater department, because it's not just reading, but it's like that literature has a abrupt breathe into it. Like, you see it live. It's like on its feet. Those words are meant to be spoken. So that's what drew me into theater, which has enhanced my English teaching abilities in that I know how to breathe life now into literature and find those different spots that makes those characters come alive and pop off the page.
You find that emotional connection in the actual, like, interpretation of the text.
Yes.
So, to switch gears a tiny little bit, or a big bit, honestly, you're very outspoken about the lack of care that exists in education concerning male educators of color and male students of color. And of course, we know that female teachers of color often are marginalized a lot as well, but your research has more geared toward the male side of things. Can you speak to that a little bit?
The reason why I went towards male teachers of color is because we are literally the minority in secondary education. So you don't see many of us, which becomes a very isolating feeling. So with women of color, there's a stronger, tight-knit community of women of color teachers that I've witnessed, that they have each other to lean on for support and all that. But I'm like, well, who do I go to when I need support? And I can go to women. I can go to the women teachers, but I think that's a totally different experience being a male of color versus being a woman of color. One of those experiences goes into, like, Black males or males of color in general, particularly Black males, not being seen as caretakers, not being respected as caretakers, as nurturers, as lovers. So, and lovers of children and nurturers of children.
Yeah.
So having this expectation that I'm going to come in and be this stern drill sergeant disciplinarian and having to combat that, which is something I don't see a lot of women of color, Black women, having to combat. Like, it's understood that they're a mother figure, that they're a nurturer, that they're a
loving. Because of the female factor. Okay. That's really interesting. Have you made any interesting findings as you've been researching, especially concerning why there is a lack of male teachers of color, especially Black male teachers of color?
One, there are not a high number of Black males getting into the profession. There's not a high number.
Why? Do we know?
One, money.
Okay.
Also, how teachers are perceived. Mm. So I don't want to be a teacher because I won't get disrespect or I won't be treated. And some of them perceive the feel like I won't be treated right as a teacher, or the field has no place for me. So like, okay. The type of person I am is not welcomed into the field. So I have to leave bits and pieces of myself out and mm-hmm. able to teach, and I don't want to do that.
Okay.
Which I think is so unfortunate, because our students feel the same way.
Yeah.
At different points, like, oh, this school thing is not for me because I have to leave bits and pieces of myself out in order to do this.
Okay.
So it's the same dichotomy of things at times.
Yeah.
Now, another issue I feel like is the retention of Black male teachers. So a lot of Black male teachers get into the field. We are emotionally abused to a certain extent from mm-hmm. different factors. While student body may be primarily made of Black and Latino students, particularly in Providence, mm-hmm. our teaching staff does not look like that. A lot mm-hmm. of times you're Black male, you're like one of maybe two.
Yeah.
You don't see, and on the other end of the table, our Latino males have a higher number of people in. So you are a Latino male teacher in Providence, you may be one of four in the school, one of five in the school, but there's a bit of a community there to go to and be able to talk to each other and share experiences. And I can share experience with Latino male teachers as well, but like, there are certain things that I think are unique to a Black male experience that affect us in school, outside of school. Who are we going to go to and talk about those things with? And be able to find some type of solidarity for support.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a little earlier about how you felt that either, I don't know if you felt as yourself as a young child, but how you noticed that a lot of your young male students of color felt like they had to leave out parts of themselves mm-hmm. before they could go into school. Can you speak a little more to that? What do they feel like they couldn't bring to school?
Well, our culture is incriminated instead of celebrated. Black culture in general. And it's so weird because Black culture, when not on Black people, is celebrated. It's fine when Black culture is not on Black people. Like, I heard...
Oh, yeah. And when white people do it, it's fine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fine. This teacher is innovative. They're hip. They're mm-hmm. in tune. They're here, their students. But when the Black
they're
teacher...
Woke. Yeah.
They're woke. Like, they're the teacher that they're going to get Teacher of the Year. But when the Black teacher does it and brings in a cultural relic and is authentic to it, it's, what are you doing? You're not competent then.
Mm.
I'm not seeing you as competent because you're using Black vernacular English in your class. You're listening, you're making rap references and using rap lyrics, and like, you're not competent. Those are things you do as the Black teacher. Mm. But the white teacher does it, it's breaking, it's new and
groundbreaking
and innovative and groundbreaking, and oh my gosh, she is so amazing. But it's a totally different feel on me. I have an example of that is totally. My colleague used a rap song by a rapper named Webby.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard it in my class. And I was like, oh, you're teaching with Webby? She was like, oh, yeah, I always do that. Like, that's how the kids learn math, something she was teaching. And I thought to myself, oh, that's cool. But unfortunately, I also thought to myself, I could never get away. I could never do that and not catch slack from the administration in my building at that time.
Mm.
I could never do it. I will be questioned till the day's end if I was to attempt. Which may is in another thing. I don't feel like that way now in the building I'm in now with the administration I have now, because they're more culturally responsive.
more culturally responsive
than where I was previously. But I thought to myself, I could never do that. It just made me feel so bad that, you know, my own culture, that I can never take part in that because I am Black. But someone who's an outsider to the culture could come in and take the culture and do what they want, and it be celebrated.
Okay. So when you speak to having ownership of your own culture, do you find yourself not just struggling with that as a teacher, but do you find yourself trying to incorporate that into your lesson planning, especially when you were at San Miguel, when you had mostly boys of color? Naturally. Like, how did they respond? Like, how did you make it about them? How did you make them feel like they were free to...
One, listening to them.
Yeah.
Listening to what their interests are, what they dislike, what they like, what they know really well, what they don't know really well, mm-hmm. and incorporating that. And the cultural piece came very naturally for me because it was, okay, I teach from what I think we all teach from a place in which we are familiar with and we know.
We teach from what we know.
But even then, like, I'm from Mississippi. They're like, they're city boys.
Yeah,
like,
it's different.
They're Black Latino city boys. We some overlapping, very much different in a lot of different ways. So there's some references they will bring up in class. I'm like, whoa, didn't know that. Like,
yeah.
Or I didn't put those two together, but it totally works. Mm. It totally goes.
So letting them have a voice.
Exactly.
And then bringing that into your lesson plan.
Cultivating that voice that they already have.
Yeah.
Not giving them a voice.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Exactly. Me listening, taking a step mm-hmm. back and listen to the voice that they have and highlighting it, amplifying the voice that they already have. Mm-hmm. That's what's important. That's what should happen. I do that even as a Black male teacher in front of Black and Latino students.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the young people got going on. Like, this new MTV, I don't get it. I don't know what it is. I don't know the songs. And I'm only 27 and I feel like I'm out the loop already. So, but they know and mm-hmm. I listen to what they tell me. I go home and I listen to things and I look up TV shows and look up different references in which they're making, and Urban Dictionary is a really good thing. So
sometimes
really good thing. Sometimes it lets you know what they're trying to say.
Whoa, you're in sixth grade.
Exactly. So learning that and doing that, I even still have to go back and do that work.
Yeah.
Because I'm not in their age group. So I wear the culture differently. It looks differently on me.
So from day one, they walk into your classroom. They have no idea who you are. How do you start what are some practical, you know, hands dirty ways to start that
process? I share who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I share who I am, and I'm not afraid to be vulnerable in sharing who I am. I'm not afraid to go a little bit into, I grew up with no money. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not afraid to show the trailer. I think in my slideshow I showed to the beginning of the year, I showed the trailer I grew up in Utica, Mississippi.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm not afraid of that. That's not a thing that I am any type afraid of, being vulnerable in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that from day one. I'm here. Mistakes. I acknowledge when I make a mistake in front of them. I apologize. If there is merit for an apology to the whole class or to the student, I apologize to the student. If it's something that I'm experimenting with, I let them know before we start, hey, I don't know what this technology does,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to try it. We're going to try it together.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't like it, we don't have to do it again.
Yeah. Just keep it real.
With yeah.
When you don't,
very
like,
much
don't be
so.
Fake.
Transparent. Be a person.
Yeah.
Be a person. Don't dehumanize yourself. And in the process of dehumanizing yourself, dehumanize them.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you can't do. Like, if it's, Fran Fanon speaks about how white people who enslave Black people not only dehumanize the Black people, they also dehumanize themselves, because no other human could ever own another human. So you're in the process dehumanizing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the same thing when we dehumanize students and dehumanizing ourselves to students and teach a burnout and losing your mind in this field. So like, no, I'm a human. I am a person.
Mm-hmm.
I am a person that teaches, and I'm teaching you, and you are a person. You are a person that teaches, and you're teaching me, and we're learning from each other. It's like a reciprocal relationship,
mm-hmm.
understanding where authority lines lie, understanding where boundaries lie, but still in that same sense, you are a person. I am a person. Let's go about this as people.
Yeah. That's awesome. I would love it if you have any resources off the top of your head, especially geared toward those of us who are, let's just be frank, who are white and privileged and are trying desperately to be helpful and to be kind and to not do any damage in any way and try to, you know, be collaborative with our colleagues of color and with our students of color, what are some resources or some strategies just so we can do better?
I think the work lies in the curriculum. I think there's a lot of work being done around teacher perception. Mm-hmm. So like perception around your students, perception around your fellow staff members. And I think that work definitely should continue to be done. But I think the difficult work lies in highlighting people of color in our curriculums, not just on Black History Month, but throughout the year. So Black History Month comes along, and of course, everybody's like, oh, I do this all the time.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
But like, you go into your classroom in October and there's nothing there. You're not doing it. So making sure we're finding different places in all our curriculums and all our teaching to really make sure we're highlighting people of color all year, not just 1 month. Make sure our posters in our room, that says a lot about us. Are there only white people on your walls? Why are there only white people on your walls, but only Black and brown people in your walls? So like, there's not a correlation there.
Put it on your wall.
It's not a match at all, you know? So making sure
what's in
exactly not what you want, you know, mm-hmm. or what you imagine education to look like. Plus, I think we got to get out this idea of schooling and start teaching.
Yeah.
And teaching involves teaching the students in front of you, not just going through the process of schooling mm-hmm. without taking into stock the people who are in front of you and how what they're learning is affecting them and what it says to them. You know, self-actualization. You can't self-actualize as a reader when all you read is dead white people and all you see on your English teacher's walls are dead white people and you're being forced to speak standard American diction where you know you don't speak it in any other place, which means now you can't talk in class because you don't know how. Mm-hmm. So like, it's so much, it's that. And that is very demoralizing to a student, to mm-hmm. a young person that's trying to discover their voice and you've snatched it.
Yeah. I could probably have an entire series just talking to you and asking you questions. And
no.
Well, you say that. You say no, but I know that I could because I always feel like I learned so much and my mind has opened up a little bit more when I talk to you and I'm just really grateful for that. I will link Naz's podcast, The Afrocentric Lesson Plan, down below where this will be posted so you guys can check out Naz's work. Thank you for being with us today, Naz.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you again for listening to the Student Centered Learning Podcast. Let us know what you think about this episode or what you tried in your school by commenting on our Facebook page. You could also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and please leave a rating so others can find us. You can also follow us on Twitter at STUCNTR Podcast. And remember, students learn deeply.